Payment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We are at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at kfarradio.com. This is Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you want to call into today's show, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. Today is the second Wednesday of the month, which means
we have Nick Nugent with an Alaska History Spot.
And who is it today?
We are looking at Ellen Nellie Cashman.
Why her?
Well, it was actually not too hard of a choice.
It's a good choice, first of all.
It was. This month has Valentine's Day. Next month has St. Patrick's Day. So I thought, what better than a lovely Irish woman?
Oh, you suck up.
I'm sure to get a Valentine's card for that kind of an intro.
Yeah, not for me, buddy. Oh.
Well, Nellie was born in the farming village of Middleton. That's a few miles from Queenston, which is now Cobb, in County Cork, South Ireland, in 1845. Her parents were Patrick and Fanny O'Kissan, and that was later anglicized to Cashman. Having a Welsh background, I know all about getting your name anglicized so someone could spell it easier. And Nellie was christened Ellen, baptized on October 15th, 1845, not long after her birth. And per the Dictionary of Canadian Biography, she's also known as Nellie Pichot, after a mining town she lived in, or just Irish Nellie. In time, Cashman would be described as pretty as a Victorian cameo and, when necessary, tougher than twopenny nails. She had a sister, Frances, or young Fanny, born a year or two later. The family was Catholic and poor, which were unfortunately categories that were synonyms for being Irish in these early years of the Great Hunger, the potato famine.
Do they realize, or did they ever get an accurate guesstimate of how many Irish people died in that famine?
Boy, I should know that. I have heard that number. It is in the thousands.
Hundreds of millions. Yeah. I mean, hundreds
of thousands. I don't know if
it
went to millions, but certainly into thousands or hundreds of
hundreds
thousands.
Hundreds of thousands, yeah.
And it was all for no good reason.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, the family fortunes declined further when Patrick died around 1850. It was then that their mother, who was also Fanny, decided to immigrate with her daughters to America. They first settled in Boston, where there were tens of thousands of Irish. A good place to settle in and kind of learn the ropes, if you will. The Irish did work together and helped each other out. She was an ambitious young lady, worked as a bellhop in a well-known Boston hotel. On leaving Boston, they resided for a while in Washington, D.C., from the nation's capital, the three women sailed to Panama, rode burros across that country, took passage on another ship to complete their journey to San Francisco in 1865 when Nellie was 20. At that time, San Francisco had a very sizable Irish population, which, of course, helped with transition.
What time of year was that? Because 1865, in May, the Civil War just got over.
Yeah, it was late summer or fall.
Okay, and yet you still had the Alabama, mm-hmm. or the Shenandoah, blowing up whalers in Alaskan waters.
Yeah, fortunately for other commercial shipping, the Confederate raiders were so busy decimating the whaling fleet, they didn't need to come south to be troublesome.
Okay. Let's not bring that up.
Yeah. Nellie's sister Fanny met and married another Irish immigrant, Tom Cunningham. Tom was a very successful shoe and boot maker, and absolutely, sturdy boots were the need of every real or would-be miner. Over the years, Nellie had a lot of businesses in the Western mining camps. They often included sales of Cunningham's boots. She often started out with a restaurant or boarding house and a shoe store attached to it. Cunningham died young. Fanny, with five small children, pulled up stakes in San Francisco and followed her sister through the mining camps. Fanny married another immigrant and settled down. Nellie decided the married life was not for her. Later, when she was asked why she remained single, Nellie replied, "Why, child, I haven't had time for marriage. Men are such a nuisance anyhow now, aren't they? They're just little boys growing up."
A little bit of attitude there.
Yeah, some
a little bit of truth and meaning.
Yep, sums things up. They moved on, traveling to the mining town of Pioche, Nevada. They opened a boarding house in 1872. That was what she was usually involved with wherever she went, boarding house and or restaurant. Nellie was really successful in her first venture, decided to make a career out of running boarding houses and restaurants in Silver and Gold Rush towns, most notably Tombstone, where she still remembered there for her philanthropy and business acumen. If you go to Tombstone, there's the building that held her restaurant still exists. They have a very nice display of Nellie-related memorabilia there. The place they went then, they went to Lincoln County, Nevada. Nellie and her mother opened a miner's boarding house on Panaca Flats, which was a milling center, also one of the roughest mining camps in the West. It had 72 saloons and 32 brothels. The Cashmans, though, had a reputation as being good cooks, honest, and moral. People wanted to go to their restaurant. It wasn't the typical dive. The women probably left there late in 1873 when there were signs that silver production had peaked and was heading downhill. Nellie had an uncanny ability to arrive with the first of stampeders and leave when a camp began to decline. She really had a feeling for the health of a mining camp. Well, while she was still young, she made quite a name for herself in mining camps scattered throughout the West: Coeur d'Alene, Virginia City, Pioche, Tombstone, numerous others. A few years later, 1874, Nellie traveled to Cassiar in the extreme north of British Columbia. One account states they chose Cassiar over South Africa by a coin toss. Well, the group also had 200 Nevada miners, and the Cassiar district had been discovered 12 years earlier. The new discoveries then near Dease Lake, near Telegraph Creek, gave the camp a second rush. And during this move, she would have had her first view of Alaska. They left Victoria, B.C., and entered the new U.S. territory via the Inside Passage, landed at Fort Wrangell, and then ascended the Stikine into British Columbia. Nellie was actually in Victoria because she had come to Victoria to deliver $500 to the Sisters of Providence. Sisters of St. Anne. She was all of her life a great philanthropist and supporter of hospitals. Well, there she opened another boarding house, grub-staked a lot of miners. In the winter of 1874-75, she led a party of six men with 1,500 pounds of supplies into Telegraph Creek, up in this frozen part of the far north, to aid a party of miners who were stricken with scurvy and unable to take care of themselves. Another account relates a snowstorm had fallen on the mountain range, trapping dozens, and some newspaper accounts state there were as many as 77 minors that were benefited by her actions.
Wow.
Every place she went on this trip, the Canadian officials did everything they could to dissuade her from going. They understood the value of a rescue effort, but they just thought, what can this young Irish woman do? We don't want to have to go out and rescue her also.
Little did they know.
Exactly. Well, they put together a search party. They gathered all the food and supplies they could, set out to rescue the men. She paid no attention again to the Canadian Army officers. Either account is heroic, considering that they agree on the following. After weeks in the freezing temperatures, the search party found the miners, and Cashman helped nurse them back to health and guided the party to safety. Later that same year, she helped raise funds to build St. Joseph's Hospital in Victoria. That was a continuous pattern for her, building churches, hospitals, and schools throughout the West. Her most favorite charities were Catholic, particularly the Sisters of St. Anne. She also contributed to the Salvation Army and other groups, while in Fairbanks later, she supported the St. Matthew's Hospital, run by the Episcopalian missionaries. Well, in the Cassiar district in the long, harsh winter, prospectors suffered and continued to experience a lot of hardship, finding very little gold. So in late 1876, she left Cassiar and returned to San Francisco, where she cared for her aging mother. 1879, she decided to try her luck further south. So she went to Tucson, where she opened a Delmonico's restaurant. In 1880, she moved to Tombstone and opened the Nevada Boot and Shoe Store, later bought a boarding house and restaurant, the Russ House. Nellie also operated another hotel and restaurant with her sister, Fanny Cunningham.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. We will be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Oh, we love our cars.
It's kind of a squeak, squeak sound.
Yeah, the engine makes a tick, tick, tick noise.
It's got no heat, and it's winter.
It goes bump, bump, bam.
It seems to be leaking something.
Problems we've all had with our cars. So get it to Pearson Auto with their state-of-the-art facility. They'll quickly diagnose the problem and get your rig humming along again. Only from Pearson Auto, off the Rich near North Pole and in West Fairbanks by the airport. Pearson Auto, your dealership alternative.
Hey, why is this light on?
It's a special Valentine's weekend with the Alaska Comedy Showcase, starring the legendary Dana Gould. Over the years, Dana's been on every TV show known to man. Now he's bringing his award-winning comedy to Fairbanks, Wednesday the 11th at the North Pole Ale House, Thursday night at the Spur, Friday and Saturday night at the Pioneer Park Theater for a special Valentine's show. All shows are at 7, tickets available at alaskacomedy.com or at the door. The Comedy Showcase with Dana Gould for Valentine's, brought to you by Zach's at Sophie's Station and KFAR Radio.
Are you a foster, adoptive, guardianship, or kinship caregiver in Alaska? The Alaska Center for Resource Families is here for you. Whether you're just getting started or need post-adoption support, this statewide resource offers free training, expert guidance, and community of Alaska caregivers. You'll find help with foster parent licensing, ongoing training, and resources for Alaska Native youth and families. Visit acrf.org to learn more. That's acrf.org. Supporting families so every child can thrive.
When Tuesday rolls around, Big Daddy's Barbecue turns up the heat. That's right. Every Tuesday, get Big Daddy's mouth-watering slow-smoked ribs for just $2 each. Yeah, you heard it. $2 for the ribs everyone in town can't stop talking about. Bring your friends, your family, or heck, bring your whole crew. At that price, why not? So swing by Big Daddy's Barbecue this Tuesday and stack your plate high with the best ribs around. Big Daddy's Barbecue, the northernmost Southern Barbecue on Wickersham between 1st and 2nd downtown.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 8 above. Winds out of the northeast around 5 miles per hour. Partly cloudy skies again tonight. Lows level off around 9 below. High temperatures reach up to 9 above tomorrow. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent in the studio here. It's the second Wednesday of the month. It's a history day.
Well, Nellie Cashman is our subject today, and from 1879 to 1898, she called Tucson, Tombstone, and Bisbee home. Bisbee was the only place she ever did not have a success. The nature of the large copper deposits didn't make the opportunities for the small miners who she usually worked for and catered.
Yeah. She wasn't a company hand.
No, not at all. She did acquire a lot of business acumen and pursued several business interests. In Tombstone, she was called by many the Angel of Tombstone. Like I was mentioning during our break, if you go to the Tombstone Women's Hall of Fame website, look up Fanny, they absolutely have some wonderful anecdotes about her and everything she did in the area. Another site, though, notes that moniker may have started as the Angel of Cassiar, but regardless, she got to know John P. Clum, founder of the Tombstone Epitaph. He once wrote that Nellie was a noble woman whose energy, courageous, and self-sacrificing life was an inspiration on the frontier for half a century. That was at the time of her obituary. Well, in the fall of 1878, the Southern Pacific Railroad was building toward Tucson, and she opened this restaurant, Delmonico's, which became kind of a famous name across the West, Delmonico's Restaurants. She was very active in Tombstone. She helped a lot of others who suffered from accidents and illnesses during the 1880s when the town lacked a hospital. She also organized the support for the town's first school and raised funds for Tombstone's First Catholic Church. In addition, she invested in claims, partnered with miners. She moved frequently, living in Kingston, New Mexico, 1887 to 88, before she heard about a new mineral find in western Arizona in the Centennial Harrisburg area of the Harquahala Mountains. She bought claims there, sold supplies to miners, lived there for a few years. During the 1890s, she lived in other Arizona towns, including Jerome, Prescott, Globe, Yuma. Her life is literally like picking up an atlas of mining camps in Arizona, and you could probably put your finger on any one of them, and Nellie was there at some time.
You know, Globe in the 1880s had wars, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not against Indians. That was there too, but factions.
And later in the copper mines against the unions.
Yeah. Very volatile.
Yes. The mining companies removed some of the miners on strike in Globe, put them on a train, hauled them out to the middle of the desert, and deboarded them and then left. It was not an easy life.
No. You ever read the book Scouting on Two Continents?
I have not.
Oh, man. I forget who the major, he was a scout, you know. Anyway.
So after her arrival in Tucson, she had, like we mentioned, moved to Tombstone. Population was about 5,000, thousands more in the outlying camps. She was joined in the rush by the Earp clan, gunfighter miner Don Neagle, John Clum, again the newspaperman. In Tombstone, she ran restaurants, retail businesses, selling miners' boots manufactured by her brother-in-law. Among her fellow citizens were the McLowry gang, the Clantons, and the Earps. Unfortunately, the business got cut down a bit with them. All Irish American, her organizing ability wasn't limited to church and hospital. If you look at the fact that 600 of Tombstone's residents were Native Irish, Nellie organized Tombstone's first St. Patrick's Day celebration, grand ball held on March 17th, 1881. In December 1883, five killers committed a robbery in Bisbee, leaving behind four dead. It was known as the Bisbee Massacre. The law was quickly on their trail. They were captured and taken to trial in Tombstone, and they were scheduled to hang March 8, 1884. The town, though, took on a carnival atmosphere, and free tickets were issued for the event. When the sheriff ran out of them, an enterprising businessman built bleachers around the gallows and began selling more tickets. That offended Nellie, and she thought that was really a miserable way to treat any living person, no matter how bad they were. And outraged and feeling that no death should be celebrated, she befriended the five convicts, visited them often, brought spiritual guidance. She pleaded with the sheriff to place a curfew on the town when the hangings were to take place. The sheriff conceded, and the vast majority of interested onlookers were not allowed to watch the event. Well, after they were executed, the men were buried in Tombstone's Boot Hill. Cashman also found out there was a plan to rob the bodies from their graves for a medical school. That also outraged her, and she hired two prospectors and armed them, and they stood guard on the grave for 10 days, and those were left undisturbed, and they're still at Tombstone's Boot Hill to this day. Later that year, a group of miners attempt to lynch mine owner E.B. Gage during a labor dispute. Nellie drove her buggy into the mob, grabbed Gage, and spirited him away to Benson, Arizona. Well, Tom Cunningham died at age 39 on February 20th, left a young widow and five children. Nellie immediately moved the family to Tucson, where Fanny could help Nellie with Delmonico's and other businesses. Nellie, unfortunately, had caught tuberculosis and died July 3rd, 1884, after she'd been to Baja California. Thereafter, Nellie assumed all the responsibility for her nieces and nephews, and she's now Aunt Nell. She raised her sister's five children, never married, but assumed the total responsibility of supporting and educating her nieces and nephews. Under her care, all five children became successful, productive citizens, despite the constant wandering the family went through. Some of her business practices can be seen from the operations in the Haleakala Mountains, about 80 miles west of Phoenix. Prospectors Mike Sullivan, Bob Stein, and Henry Watton hit rich veins of gold and quartz in the area. By early December, Nellie was provisioned and on her way to the new camp, and she talked about opening a boarding house, but this time didn't. She did obtain some very valuable claims, promoted the new district with articles published by Arizona newspapers, and she understood the geology of the district and wrote quite intelligently about it. Nellie prospered from the sale of supplies and equipment and the sales of these early acquired mining claims whose values were promoted in her public statements and articles. So, one unique aspect of the enterprise there was Nellie may have fallen in love. The February 23rd, 1889 issue of the Phoenix Daily Herald reported that Nellie and Mike Sullivan had left Mike's Bonanza Mine to get married. Well, if so, they apparently fell out of love on the way to the preacher, as nothing further was ever heard of the impending marriage.
It was a love story for naught. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break here. We're going to give you some bumper music. Steve Miller Band, Jungle Love, a.k.a. 1977, the year they turned on the pipeline. Then we're going to go into some Fox News, state news, commercials, and weather. And we will be back. We'll be right back.
Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. The FBI's been busy working on trying to find 84-year-old Nancy Guthrie. She's been missing since February 1st. Yesterday, a video of someone outside her door was released. Today, they're looking around outside. The Bureau out with a statement that says, in part, this morning, numerous FBI agents are conducting an extensive search along multiple roadways in the Catalina Foothills area related to the Nancy Guthrie investigation. We appreciate the assistance and support we've received from the Tucson community. The FBI continues to offer a $50,000 reward for information leading to the recovery of Nancy Guthrie. You can help by submitting tips to the FBI, 1-800-CALL-FBI. Midterm elections coming up in November. How are you feeling, Speaker Mike Johnson?
I expect to win. I believe we are going to win the midterms and grow this majority so our job's a little bit easier. And the reason I'm so confident in that is we have an extraordinary record to run on.
His comments on Fox Business. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
While Seattle Seahawks fans were celebrating what would become a victory in Super Bowl 60 on Sunday, one Alaskan musician had the opportunity of a lifetime on the big stage. Rose Crelly was seen on the national broadcast of the Super Bowl playing violin next to Bad Bunny during his halftime performance. Rose Crelly told Alaska's news source that she grew up in Fairbanks after being adopted from an orphanage in China. "I've always loved camping and hiking and canoeing, and Alaska has always had a special place for me," Crelly said. According to Crelly, her love of violin began in this environment as her older brother and aunt also played the instrument. That love for music eventually brought Crelly to the University of Alaska Fairbanks, where she studied music education and violin performance. According to Crelly, she went on to earn her master's degree in violin performance at the University of Louisville in Kentucky before becoming a performing violinist with the San Francisco Conservatory. While working in San Francisco, Crelly said she was approached to audition to play in the Super Bowl halftime show. Though she was informed that she would be part of the show in late December, Crelly said she didn't believe the news until she began rehearsals.
Online at KFAR660.com.
Well, it's dark, it's cold, but hey, at least we don't have to worry about a sunburn. Hey, Fairbanks, Les Nichols with Fairbanks Nissan. This time of year absolutely wreaks havoc on our cars. Hard starts, no starts, is my winterization working? Heaters that aren't heating, how old is my battery? Brakes that are stiffer than a New Year's cocktail? Suspension that feels every single bump in the road? And life doesn't stop. You still have to get to work, drop off the kids, pick up the kids, do the shopping. And when you call your usual shop with a problem, they'll tell you they can get you in sometime this summer? Maybe it's time for a New Year's resolution. Stop waiting in line and call Fairbanks Nissan. Yes, we sell Nissans, but we work on all makes and models, even yours. In fact, we probably do more work on other brands than we do on Nissans. And we work with almost all extended warranty companies. So you can call us even if you got your warranty somewhere else. When you need help in a hurry, not months from now, call Fairbanks Nissan. Schedule your service online at FairbanksNissan.com. That's FairbanksNissan.com. Fairbanks Nissan, here when winter doesn't wait.
Mountain View Eye Center is making a difference. Ebba is from the Congo. Her son moved to Alaska bringing Ebba, who had become blind from untreated cataracts. They went to Mountain View Eye Center for cataract surgery, and for the first time in years, Ebba could see clearly. "You are so handsome," she told her son. And then Ebba truly saw her granddaughter for the first time. Good things are happening. Visit MountainViewEyes.com.
It's dark, it's cold, and that snow's gonna start loading up on a couple of those trees hanging over your yard or house. You do know that Eric and his crew at Great Alaska Tree Company work year-round, right? Troublesome trees don't wait for summer, and neither should you. Winter's the worst time for tree damage. To power lines, cars, and homes, specializing in those tricky, hard-to-reach areas, licensed, bonded, and insured, it's Great Alaska Tree Company.
Hi, this is Eric with Great Alaska Tree Company. Yeah, we're totally still dropping trees all winter long. Give us a call, 978-47.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Nick Nugent in the studio here. It's a good Wednesday. It's not 37 below like it started out yesterday. You know,
I can see shadows being cast outdoors.
Yeah, we barbecued the groundhog. But
speaking of Groundhog Day, I was asked, do you know why there are no Italian groundhogs? It's because when anyone asks them if they saw their shadow, they go, "Hey, I didn't see nothing."
That's very apropos.
Yes. Well, Nellie, After her time in the Harkahula rush and when it subsided, she entered a restless stage and can't find out. There's gaps in the stories about her. She apparently went as far as Africa and had been visiting friends. The trip isn't otherwise confirmed, but the gaps fit in pretty well. She flitted between Prescott, Jerome, and Yuma, Kingston in New Mexico, in conjunction with her nieces and nephews, then teenagers. She prospected in Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming. 1895, she made her first trip to Alaska properly when she went to Juneau, basically to meet with old friends from the Cassiar District. Normally, she ended up back in Tombstone or Tucson. That mm-hmm. was kind of that was the draw, and
her base.
Had been home for a long time.
Yeah.
And she awaited news of the next great strike, and somehow she seemed to find them out early.
Hmm.
But, of course, news of such a strike did reach her in about July of 1897 when the Portland landed in Seattle with the gold and bags of gold from the Klondike discovery. By November of that year, 1897, Nellie was making plans to enter the stampede, and Arizona newspapers reported her plans to organize an expedition to the Klondike. She staged out of Victoria, B.C., put together a Klondike outfit 24 years after her Caribou District adventures, left Seattle for Wrangell on March 13, 1898. She originally had planned to go to the Klondike via the Cassiar, but found out the conditions for doing that were very poor, and she elected to take the Chilkoot route out of Skagway. She was about 54 at the time. Arrived by herself in Skagway.
How many times have I said this? They don't make them like they used to.
Absolutely
not. They do not make them like they used to.
Odd what a life of hardship can drive you to do. She arrived in Skagway on March 20th. She had some help along the way, but not a lot, as we understand. She arrived in Dawson in mid-April 1898. She knew her way around to Boomtown, which was very fortunate. She absolutely knew what kind of businesses would work. She quickly established another Delmonico's in Dawson while on the lookout for mining claims she could buy into. In most of her earlier trips, she'd been the only woman in Dawson. Of course, there were hundreds. A few of them, like Ethel Berry and Belinda Mulrooney, were pretty much as tough and driven as Nellie. Nellie showed a litigious streak. She took a couple of these women to court and lost, but ultimately she acquired a good claim on Bonanza, number 19 below Discovery, and mined it successfully. Later, the claim sold for $100,000. As an Irish woman of her time, Nellie was not overly fond of the English and the English manner of administering the Klondike Gold Camp. When others proudly displayed the Union Jack, Nellie quietly ran up the Stars and Stripes and waited for an excuse to cross the border into U.S. territory. While gold was struck by Felix Pedro in 1902, early 1903, Klondikers were rushing to the district where they found deep frozen ground. Many returned to the Yukon. The ground was rich and the field was large. By 1904, serious mining was underway. Nellie left Dawson. On her arrival in Fairbanks, she immediately opened a grocery store and began looking for ground and undertook the fundraising we mentioned for the new Episcopalian St. Matthew's Hospital.
So, bam, there it was.
Yeah, she hit the ground running every single time. There was no deer in the headlights with her, certainly.
No.
Well, she set out to raise money for the new hospital. She staked herself in some of the many poker games being played by the well-to-do mining camp and apparently did well enough that she was one of the major financiers of the hospital. It was time then for her to move on to one more camp. In 1907, Nellie, then 60 years old, packed her sled and embarked to the Koyukuk in the southern foothills of what is now, of course, known as the Brooks Range. The heart of the Koyukuk District's about 600 miles upriver from the mouth of the Koyukuk. It's a south flowing tributary of the Yukon. Well, during Cashman's time, the district was reached by shallow draft steamboats for about 450 miles to Allakaket, smaller boats to Bettles Trading Post, and then by horse-drawn scows up the middle fork of the Koyukuk for about 80 more miles to Wiseman and Nolan Creek. So that district was explored and prospected with some success by John Minook, man named Three-Fingered Miller, and others in the mid-1890s. And we have a picture, a postcard in the collection of Nellie leaving one of the camps on a dog sled in the winter. Not too much information, but it's definitely her in the picture.
Wow.
The best pay in the new district was underground on Nolan Creek, and the placer gold was buried by more than 100 feet of frozen, boulder-rich glacial overburden. It was rich, but because of the remoteness, it had to be rich to return even a small profit. Well, it was, then and now, a miner's district, and Nellie, by this time in her life, was an experienced miner. So the miners in the district were, by and large, older, conservative. Men as diverse as Hudson Stuck and Bob Marshall thought that they were unique in Alaska, and as summarized by Cashman's biographer, every person on the Koyukuk could do practically everything. One had to be a blacksmith, a mechanic, steam engineer, logger, geologist, carpenter, baker, cook, dog musher, and laundryman. A shirker was out of it, not respected and not tolerated. And these were the kind of men that Nellie had lived with for 40 years. She fit right in. If she lacked one or two skills, she certainly was well off enough to hire help. Episcopal deacon Hudson Stuck wrote about the Koyukuk miners as some of the best men that Alaska contains are to be found in the Koyukuk, and I will not say that some of the worst are not there also. His counterpart, Bishop Rowe, wrote that the men were conservative old-timers, the type which has pioneered the way into this country for their fellow men. They have the true spirit of the North. I do not believe that you will find a finer lot of men in any community than those Koyukuk miners. If you look at Wiseman today in the remoteness and get to know the miners, you can understand, especially like in Bob Marshall's time, they were so remote, they either had to get along or I think you just
they'd all die.
gave up and left.
Yeah. Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio with Nick Nugent. We'll be back after these minutes.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Spring and summer are on the move, and so is the official dealership of Life in Alaska. Jeans has lined up 16 Jeep Wranglers with up to $2,000 in bonus cash. 13 Jeep Compass 4x4s with up to $5,500 in bonus cash. 11 Grand Cherokees, 7 Jeep Gladiators, and 3 Wagoneers to choose from. New year, new prices, same legendary value. Make Jeep your thing and get 2026 on the move. Jeans Chrysler Jeep Dodge and Ram. Not all buyers qualify for all offers. Inventory as of February 1st. Hurry, offers end 3/2/26.
It has occurred to me that I am an introvert. I live a sheltered life as an old septic tank, gazing at the stars, pondering my poetry, appreciating the weather, rain or snow. I know my family has Bigfoot Pumpin' and Thawin' faithfully pump me out once a year. I count on that flow in my life, and I will continue to serve them much better for many years to come.
KFAR Radio is proud to bring you 50-50 Friday. Every Friday at 9 a.m., log on to our website for a half-price offer from a local business. Great deals on restaurants, stores, shops, services, sporting events, and more. It's 50-50 Friday. This week's offer?
It's Aurora Artistries offering a unique and inspiring paint night experience. Whether you're planning a fun date night, girls' night out, or a memorable birthday party, they've got you covered. From weekly paint nights to special paint your pet sessions, these events are designed for all skill levels, hosted exclusively at Silver Gulch Brewing and Bottling Company. They provide all the supplies and step-by-step instructions. Just bring your imagination. Unwind, sip, and let your creativity flow with Aurora Artistries. Enjoy paint night at half price, as Aurora Artistries is this week's 50-50 Friday offer.
So log on to KFARradio.com this Friday morning starting at 9 a.m. for this awesome half-price offer. But hurry, as this deal will go fast. It's 50-50 Friday from KFAR.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today, with daytime highs approaching 8 above. Northeasterly winds around 5 miles per hour. Lows dip down to about 9 below. Tonight, partly cloudy skies. Highs level off around 9 above. Tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back, and I'm going to give you Dave's weather report. Dave's weather report is that in February, we get the 20 degrees temperature changes between night and day, which just was reported there. And in March, I love March. March and September are my favorite months. You get the 30 degree temperature change, maybe 10, 15 below at night to 15, 20 above during the day. And we're hitting it. Saturday is Valentine's Day, and that's that line of demarcation where you got the good, strong 8 hours. You're getting 6 to 7 minutes of daylight every day. And that's my weather report, Nick.
Yes. It's going to get better.
Yes.
Well, I grew up in the Midwest, where March is the month that you have wonderful balmy days, a cold front comes through, and the next thing you know, some little girl with a dog and a house are blowing by.
Go by, Toto. Go bye-bye.
Nellie did very well in those years. She was in the Koyukuk District when deep gold was discovered on Nolan Creek. She recognized the need for thawing and got herself to Fairbanks as quickly as she could. She ordered steam boilers and piping for herself and other deep miners, which she gave the miners good terms on. The boilers...
Yeah, I know. She bought them and, leasing them from me or selling,
Actually, from one of the things I read, her terms were better than they likely could have got them working by themselves.
True.
So the boilers enabled productive mining, which lasted till about 1920, when a lot of modernization or increase of scale was needed. Nellie did well in those years. She made a habit of leaving the district in the winter to visit family and friends, including her favorite nephew, Mike Cunningham. He was a successful banker in Bisbee. Nellie was still capable of mushing her dogs hundreds of miles on her trips in and out of the district. The Associated Press documented one dog mushing trip she made from Nolan to Anchorage in 1922 when she completed a 17-day, 350-mile trip from Nolan Creek to Nana in December of 1923, 78 years old. In the 78 years, she was 78 at the time. Nellie and others tried unsuccessfully to promote and raise money for larger operations. But at that time, mining was running into problems for any smaller operation. The times after World War I were not good for small mines. Gold price was stuck at $20, $67 an ounce. A lot of young, abundant labor had been lost to the war and did not return.
This is what I want everyone to understand. This lady started out with transportation and covered wagons.
Yes.
And then went to airplanes.
Yes.
Enclosed airplanes. Not the open, sop with camels. Enclosed airplanes. Her lifetime.
There were times that will never be duplicated, I suppose, for the amount of technology changes one will see.
Yeah.
Well, she visited California, where she declared she'd like to be appointed the U.S. Deputy Marshal for the Koyukuk, and that aspiration never came true. She was getting a little old to be Deputy Marshal. In the summer of 1924, she realized her health was slipping. She stopped briefly at the St. Anne's Mission in Nulato, then went upriver to Fairbanks. She was admitted to St. Joseph's Hospital, then sent to Providence in Seattle. She recognized that her time was almost up, and she settled down in Victoria, British Columbia, in 1924. In January 1925, she died of pneumonia in the very same hospital that she had helped finance. Because of her giving spirit, when she died, she was known throughout the West. Her eulogy was published in papers all over the country. Nellie, who had never married, made her mark as one of the first women entrepreneurs in the West, a miner, an angel of mercy. Throughout the various mining camps, she'd been called the Frontier Angel, Saint of the Sourdoughs, Miner's Angel, Angel of the Cassiar, and the Angel of Tombstone. So that's a good thing about having a lot of newspapers back, and that they each wanted their own catchphrase, if you will. Well, Nellie Cashman Day is still celebrated in Tombstone, Arizona, on the eve of Women's Equality Day to commemorate heroic and liberated women of the 1880s. Cashman's restaurant still stands next to a business originally established also by her. Alaska was Nellie's last stampede. It was the only place where she settled down and actually did much mining. So it seems pretty appropriate that Nellie was honored by the Alaska Mining Hall of Fame in Fairbanks, Alaska, in 2006, almost exactly a century after her residency in Fairbanks. Nellie was immortalized on a 29-cent stamp issued by the U.S. Postal Service October 18th, 1994. So today we can remember a very, very remarkable woman.
80 years of incredible life.
Yes, and I think the term selfless applies well. Yes, she made money, but it seems like a lot of that went to philanthropy and helping others. I have never found a case where they said there was a disaster and Nellie ignored it.
True. True. My goodness. Well, thank you. That, you know, I knew periphery about her, but never the detail like that. But that's why you're here, you know. you got standards, Nick.
And I think that sometimes if you look at everything that's written about Nellie, the Alaska part is maybe not as well known. It doesn't show up. Some of the references used by the Alaska Mining Hall of Fame were really good for finding out information on Nellie. And she also here did not have the abundance of newspapers reporting her. So hopefully we'll get people to realize this really remarkable person who's all totally identified with Tombstone was here and did just as much and had just as much of an impact wherever she went.
True, true. Well, what are you thinking about for March?
Well, for March, I believe we still have Libby Dalton coming to talk
about...
Oh,
that is right.
Yeah, about her
parents.
Father and grandfather, the Pathfinders.
And what about her mom?
We better schedule Friday of that week also.
Oh, my goodness. Father, grandfather, mom. Oh, my goodness. I think the world to Libby. Yeah. She's a great lady.
Absolutely. And her mom's journalism efforts,
yeah,
I think, would come as a surprise to many who were not here at that time when she was very active.
True. So you said something earlier in private that I'm going to bring up.
Okay.
You're going to go to Tommy G's, and this is an advertisement for Tommy G's, by the way, and get a steak for you and Sue for Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Okay.
I just find that The meat at Tommy's is so good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, easy to prepare.
Tell something Fairbanks doesn't know. Well, say something true. We don't know.
Well, something that maybe everybody might not know or might not think about, there's very few restaurant opportunities that just beat doing it yourself with Tommy's product.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing about me and steak. Whenever I see on, like, the internet or Facebook, anyone says, where's the best steak place in Fairbanks? I always just say, my house. You know, because Tommy G gives you a great steak, and what you can do with it is incredible.
You just go in and you get so many great tips.
Yeah.
Like the idea of putting your steak uncovered on a plate in the fridge.
Yeah, 24 hours. Yeah.
And let it age a little bit.
And let it dehydrate.
That surprised me. And then certainly, proper way to put on a rub.
You should listen to my Fairbanks Foodie Show on Saturdays at 1 o'clock. You would learn all this.
You know, it seems like invariably when I'm doing something on Saturdays, about 2 o'clock, I need to go turn on KFAR.
You're killing me, Holmes.
Well, I don't necessarily listen to a lot of but I think, darn it, I missed Dave. I'm going to have to put a reminder on my phone calendar.
Last Saturday, I did an airing, and I went through and I made a list of all the top-reviewed restaurants, and depending on what they serve, like, cheeseburgers, pizza, chicken wings, Thai restaurants. And I had so many phone calls and texts, and half of them were, you made me go to eat lunch. I was going out to home, my Badger Road, and I had to turn around because of you, you jerk.
I understand that. Well, I'll plug another restaurant quickly, and I don't feel bad about it because it's not here. But if you get to Spokane, go to a breakfast lunch place called the Crimson Door. They start you out with beignets that almost float off the plate. They're crisp.
Mr. Nugent, do you think I'm ever going to make it to Spokane?
I don't see why not. It's not a bad place.
There's other places I would rather go.
Well, I can kind of.
I don't have a child there.
That's true.
Yeah, okay.
So, we go down.
I don't have a business interest there.
You could probably come up with
that's
one.
That's what I was afraid you would say.
It's a real estate market like you can't imagine right now.
I'm sure it is. Oh, man. So what type of steak are you going to get at Tommy G's?
Probably a porterhouse, nice thick one, and might even do a tomahawk for a change. Do one of the, real thick ones and then do the reverse sear on it and whatever it'll be. Whatever it will be good. That's one thing I like about going there. If my favorite steak is something and they don't happen to have it, my second favorite will be an equally good choice.
So how are you using your oven, a grill, a smoker?
We do the oven this time of year.
Okay, yeah.
Just a little easier to control heat. One of these days, I'm going to get myself one of those little pellet stoves that controls heat very well and go from there.
They're a lot of fun. I have one of those. I have a few items on my deck that will, burn meat.
I bought a Blackman, the grill top.
Yeah.
And the thing that you would be happy to have one of those is if you ever make cheesesteaks.
What a
process you can get.
Or you're cooking scrambled eggs for 30.
Yeah, exactly.
I've never had the interest of buying one of those, but oh well. Hey, it was a great show. Fairbanks, it was a great show. I will see you on Friday. I don't know who I have on Friday. I don't know if I've got anyone booked up for Friday, but I'm off Monday because it's a holiday. And so I will see you on Friday. Mr. Nugent, thank you very much. Fairbanks, you have a great day. I will see you Friday.